I would like to begin by saying that I really was a bit reluctant to accept the invitation to speak here because, well, for several reasons. Because for one thing, I've just been in Milwaukee 6 months, and I'm just beginning to feel like I've got at least one root down. And let me tell you, this is quite an experience after 9 years of putting down roots in Birmingham and then pulling them up and trying to put them down in Milwaukee. Consequently, I only have a beginning of a feel of the situation in Milwaukee. But more than that, I fear, as I tell you a little bit about what I, together with others at Cross Lutheran, are trying to do, will really stifle the kind of creative agony that has to take place in every pastor's and every Christian's mind. You've heard the phrase, each Christian has to do his thing. And I sometimes fear that, as one Christian says, the thing that he's doing, he is turning some people off and not giving them that creative agony that every Christian has to go through to find out the thing that he's got to do in his locale and in his place for his Lord. Furthermore, I fear that what I have to say here might give the impression that these things that are being done are great ideas with the final stamp, and you get out into your particular turf next year or the following year, and not only will your turf be different, but things will have changed so radically that some of the things that I say here today will be passé tomorrow, and maybe they're already passé. So that the stance that a pastor takes in his role as pastor is, to me, the most important thing, and I would like to just say a word about this before I get into the strategy that somebody on the program committee here asked me to bring to you today. We've heard the stance of listening, and Pastor Hertzfeld just said that he spent 6 months listening, and that's exactly what he did. This can't be stressed too much. I would like to stress the theology that we've always said, but which is a hard thing for pastors and for church people to really accept and believe, that in Jesus Christ all things are new, and there is the possibility of beginning all over tomorrow with my ministry in the areas that were not clicking yesterday or today. There's the possibility of new arrangements, of new patterns, of new programs, of new approaches in the city and in the church. But, you know, pastors and church people are, and beginning with myself, were the last to be open to the newness that we really say in our theology is basic to what it means to being a Christian. We say that in Christ, every day is totally new. And yet we fight to keep the old patterns and the old ideas like nobody's business. And the church is the most reactionary to change, the slowest to be a part of the new that's good in God's world. And to me, the theology of the resurrection and the whole newness of life in Jesus Christ is a very important bit of theology that has to be a part of a pastor and a Christian in this age of change. There was a good article in Christian Century last week or the week before on this. I think if I got my articles right, it's the article written by the Christian in Czechoslovakia who made this point in a very beautiful way of putting it. Now, with this, I would like to tell you a little bit about the situation in Milwaukee, the uniqueness of that turf, and what we are trying to do in the listening ministry and also in the serving ministry in that place. First of all, I have a largely white congregation, like 500 white communicants and 100 black communicants. This is a very specific part of the problem and the challenge. For one thing, most of the white people don't live in the community. That's a problem. They don't live there. They don't know what that community is all about. They literally drive into church on Sunday morning and they drive back out, and they no more feel that community than someone who lives in India. That's a problem. Or most of the white people are over 60, and they honestly feel that I've done my part in the church. There's not really much left for me to do. You know how senior citizens sometimes think. Furthermore, precisely because they live out of the community, precisely because most of them have come through the parochial school system and the Lutheran high school that we have there, maybe I shouldn't say because of this, but certainly this was all a part of it. There is the attitude that we are good Lutheran Christians, so don't tell us anything about our mission and our role. We have played it. We are good Lutheran Christians. Don't give us any guilt complexes about what we ought to be doing and how we ought to be involved. Almost none of these white people can even begin to think black, which means that it's very difficult to involve them in any kind of service and ministry to the community in which we're located. And furthermore, most of these white people think that we as a congregation have done great things for the colored folks in our community. And Cross Lutheran Church is supposed to be the church that has really done something, quote, in the black community. That's enough of that problem. Another problem that exists and challenges that the black members of our congregation are mostly teenagers. That's great. Women and almost no men. When I came, there was one man who was on the church council and involved in the life of the church to any degree. There were about seven or eight others who were communicant members. We could come back to the reason for this, but obviously this has its limitations. Furthermore, many of these black members became members because of the parochial school that gave their children not only a quote, superior education to the public school system, but also was a way of getting them out of the black community. So what do we have here? We have black people who are, many of them are trying to escape the black community at a moment in history that says black is beautiful. I have many black members who are saying black isn't so beautiful. In fact, when I spoke to some teenage religion classes at Lutheran High, it wasn't a black member of my congregation, but it could very well have been, who reacted to my use of the term black and said she wanted to be called brown or Negro, but not black, a sign of how she was so completely out of the current thinking and her own revolution and her own part in what's taking place in the Negro community. She was an escapist and living in the closet herself, and this is part of what I face as I seek to minister. As a white man now, in the middle of this kind of situation. Thirdly, looking at the community, the immediate community, the Negro community in which we're located is very alienated from the larger community, typical of almost every community in the country, in the inner city, in the north particularly. I would say that this is one of the big differences between the black communities of the south and the north, an extreme sense of alienation, fragmented and mobile. Alienated because of the shattered dreams that Pastor Hertzfeld was talking about. In the south, the black man doesn't expect very much, and he's amazed when things do change a little bit. But the black man comes north expecting the promised land, and he discovers that it's anything but the promised land, and that makes for some very real psychic and spiritual problems, the likes of which no white family has ever gone through. I can almost say that categorically. Alienated also because a good 50 to 60% of the black people in Milwaukee, and this is typical of nearly every northern urban center, has come within the last 15 years from the plantations of the South, from a rural life suddenly into the middle of an urban complex that makes good white folks who are monetarily and financially secure swim and sends them to psychiatrists because they are honestly forced to be so neurotic in their life. This is what urbanization does to good white folks, $15,000 a year white folks. You can imagine the psychiatric and spiritual problems that exist in a community of people who don't feel a part of anything and who get almost nothing of the life that's all around them. Fragmented black communities all over the country, partly because of the good white system that we've described here, figure that the only way we can get anything is to play the white man's game. And so one by one, pastors sell out to City Hall, and in our ward in the elections this past week, half of the black votes in our ward went to Mayor Meyer, who I understand outside of Milwaukee sounds pretty good, but inside of Milwaukee he isn't so good. All of this points to a fragmentation of leadership. And this is why the sort of thing that Pastor Hertzfeld was describing before as to what's happening in Oakland with the Council of Unified Black People, or what was this, what did you call this?
Black Unity Council.
Black Unity Council is leagues ahead of a lot of cities where black people from all walks of life realize the necessity of coming together and do. And I'd just like to say, make an aside here, if I may. I think we can be very grateful that someone like Pastor Hertzfeld is in that setting. He didn't say this, but he was indeed a part of God's great gift to bring about the sort of thing that he was describing here. And for a Missouri Synod black clergyman to be able to step out of the kind of German 16th century confessionally oriented theological training that we gave him, and to be able to do this kind of leadership so quickly and so immediately and so well, and to be recognized by his peers as a leader who does know both theology and people, is indeed something for which we can be grateful. And I'm glad that you recognize the kind of contributions that this man is making and can make to future pastors. That was an aside. I might just add one more thing about the black community. It's at this point a very frustrated community because we've gone through the whole process of trying in a nonviolent way, after most black communities had decided that nonviolence doesn't work. Milwaukee, under the NAACP Youth Council, said we'll try it once more, and of course the results have almost proved that nonviolence doesn't work very well. Finally, after much walking, demonstrating, and what have you, 100 plus days, the City Council throws us the sop of a fair housing law that covers about one-third of the housing in Milwaukee, and which is really nothing. And so the black community feels frustrated. We tried the normal channels that white men have always told us we've got to use within the system, you know, and it doesn't work. And so therefore, we have to turn to the other channels. And this is a part of a life experience of these people. We tried. It didn't work. Therefore, violence is the only possible means of possible change. The white power structure in Milwaukee, very reactionary in many respects, reminds me of Birmingham at the time of Bull Connor. Birmingham, in fact, has progressed beyond the point where most of Milwaukee's power structures are now, and I say this advisedly. We have a police system in Milwaukee under Breyer that is more repressive and more stupid than the present police system in Birmingham, and it's very much like Bull Connor's approach back in 63, who said, "We will take care of any problems and meet any force by force, and don't ask us." This was the great police, head of the police in Milwaukee, who said just a few days ago, "Don't ask us to meet with any of the minority groups in this city. We don't need to meet with any of them to understand them. We can handle our work. We know our business, and we know it well." That's the kind of 18th and 19th century thinking that we have in Milwaukee, and you can see the makings for an explosion. What do we do in the midst of this? I would like to maybe just suggest that these little things, these little strategies that our local congregation and I are trying are very small and only beginnings. And I certainly preface my remarks with that kind of reservation. But let me quickly just go down some lines here and leave it at that. Number one, one of the first things that I felt it necessary to do was to set up a social action committee that would do something. I have never seen in any congregation a social welfare committee that ever involved itself in social action, because social welfare is such a big job, and most people usually consider social welfare as the immediate answers to immediate needs. And even though social welfare in its proper understanding is social action, I just haven't seen a social welfare committee that does it. Our social action committee is seeking to sensitize the congregation, and we were able to get enough people on the social action committee that were aware and alert that at least a few things have happened, like an open forum in which we brought some of the grassroots black leaders face-to-face with some of the white Lutheran politicians and leaders in the community, as well as our own congregation. Most people went away from this open forum on a Sunday afternoon with some rather disturbed feelings that, man, oh, man, there was a lot of hate in that meeting, and, man, oh, man, that never realized that the chasm was so great between black and white. And a few things along this line, which is precisely what most of the white members of our congregation, and there were many others from the area, didn't realize and needed to know before there would be any beginning of solution. We got the Social Action Committee got our congregation to join perhaps the most aggressive community organization in the area, Triple O, which is the Organization of Organizations. That's literally what it means, and it's an attempt to pull in under one umbrella all of the many organizations that are working to bring about something of the unity that's described here. This particular organization has been involved in trying to bring to a head the kind of dehumanization that's been taking place in a rehabilitation area right within a couple blocks of our church. Without going into all of the details, it's simply a typical city hall program run by white folks with all of the dehumanizing side effects. And this particular organization has been zeroing in on this. We've had a couple of demonstrations, and one of our members, who is the delegate to Triple O, got arrested in this thing, and so we got a few of our members saying, "Oh, we're ashamed of this man," but it really was an opportunity for our congregation to face up to what's involved in facing power structures today. We involved about 10 of our members in the demonstrations and are still in the process of this. The Social Action Committee got the Social Welfare Committee together with it to make plans for this summer. What we might do, first of all and simply, to bind up the wounds when and if the revolution takes off in our city, and we hope to be able to go beyond this, but this is the point at which we figured we could at least get the folks together. Another point beyond the Social Action Committee, changes in usual structures, worship, with a white pastoral staff and a black community, it's very important that people who come to worship with us don't get the feeling that black people are just tolerated here. We had to involve, I felt, black people in the leading of the service, and so the simplest thing was to involve black teenagers, at least at the point of inviting for prayers and doing some of the reading of the lessons. And this has had an interesting effect upon the black members as well as the white members of our congregation and also visitors. So there's never a service in our church where there isn't some black person participating in the leading of the worship. Another thing that we're trying and changing a structure, instead of the Lenten services in the church, we are having home devotions in which we have them in different localities and are getting black people to black members to attend in the six different places, so that as a congregation we begin to face each other as individuals. Because what's happened is that these white people who've been members here for years, you know, have never really conversed with these black people. They don't know what they're thinking, they don't know what they're living, and we're hoping that this will bring them a little bit more face-to-face with the kind of structure and guided devotions that we are suggesting here, with a great deal of freedom also for conversation. We have a Saturday Freedom School, and we call it that, which is really a combination of half religion courses and a half Negro history course. We hope to have something along this line for adults during the summer, together with other churches. Third point, we really feel the need for cooperating with other churches in the community, and we're working especially on a summer program with the Presbyterian and Baptist Church in the immediate community. We feel that we are in this immediate community together as the body of Christ, and that Presbyterian Church and that Black Baptist Church over there with its unseminaried pastor have something to offer to us, and we to them, and it's a very interesting experience as we begin to get off the ground here. Very interestingly, our congregation is open enough that they do not react to this kind of thing with all the charges of heresy, and I guess we can be blessed, consider ourselves blessed in this regard, that unionism is not the big cry and the hue. We are in the process of working together in a kind of joint operation with an ALC-LCA and our congregation that happened to be sort of in a semicircle right there in that community. Although the ALC and LCA congregations are at the edge, but they feel the need for being a part of this thing, and we hope to be able to share in some things, sharing resources. We've already set up some joint youth programs and summer programs, and perhaps one of the most important things that's yet to get off the ground is the coming together of our social ministry and social action committees for the purpose of hearing out from and with the black community housing needs and situations. We'll decide from there what we do, but there are possibilities for investment in housing for low-income families, provided that this is not a white paternalistic approach. From the word go, after our committees get together next week, if we agree that there's an area here that we ought to work in, we will immediately have on any kind of board or committee that works on this thing people from the community, and maybe we will see the necessity for simply being resource people for a community board or committee that's made up completely of black people. This would be the ideal, and it fits in with the theology that C.T. Vivian was talking about last night, and this is the kind of servant operation that churches are to be involved in with no strings attached. We see this as a need in the community. We have certain financial and other professional resources which we will offer with no strings attached. Here, black community, you tell us as you see it what you think might be possible for us to do, and we'll see what happens here. My own personal involvement in the community, I feel it's very important that I, as a pastor, see my role and social action in the community not as something of a diversion or something of a sideline in my ministry, but a part of it. My participation in Operation Breadbasket in Milwaukee, the thing that you were heard from C.T. Vivian last night, is an important point at which I try to make contact and be involved. Been a part of a few other things too, we'll skip that. Just mention the last three things quickly. There's a cadre of Lutheran ministers. Someone was asking in our bull session last night, what do you do when you're in a locale where ministers are not open, much less the lay people? In nearly every locale, there are at least two or three ministers who are open. And to bring these together, to forge the kind of creative theological thinking that has to take place on that piece of turf, is an absolute necessity, and there is no one man who can spin out in his own mind what is to be done in that given area. And anyone who pretends to do this is indeed pretending to be God. This is the kind of loose association that I think probably, if I heard Pastor Hertzfeld right this morning at 4 o'clock, this is really the way this whole Black Alamo clergy thing started. Just a few ministers who said, we need to get together and share, and the thing just grew and grew and grew. And they didn't plan this thing to begin with, but this is how things spin out when we recognize our need to share and to receive from one another. The possibility of a youth center in our complex of operation is a possibility, though this whole thing has to be not only a matter of a Black person operating it, but, and this is something I haven't told the congregation yet, and it's not because I'm hiding anything under the rug, it's just that I realize that they'd get hung up on this thing, and then they'd say no to the whole thing. But this thing has to be something that the community itself has a say in, or else we are again dangling a program in front of a community, and this is paternalism. What's more, any kind of youth center program, it better be that we would, that the community would participate in, and that we would encourage, I would hope, would go beyond the athletics emphasis. And this is an interesting thing, that there's hardly any Black man of the new breed that is satisfied with the typical athletic program in a youth center, but you'll notice that drama and this kind of creative thing where people get to face themselves and discover something beyond themselves and think through who they are, that's the sort of thing that a youth center program and any kind of center program needs to be involved in and is probably going to be moving toward if it is open to what people are thinking in the very community. A last thing that's happening that I would mention is that we are currently having seminars on the urban complex, bringing in Black leaders on Saturday morning. It's taking place right now to address themselves to various aspects of the urban complex. Last week, the kickoff was a Black militant revolutionary on Black power. The whole thing is geared especially not only for white people in our congregation, and we didn't get very many of them, but white people, white Lutherans, concerned Lutherans, most of them happen to be, interestingly enough, from the young adult age group, from all over the city. Because part of our responsibility as a congregation, a biracial congregation in this time of revolution, is not simply to serve that immediate community, but to serve the rest of the white Lutheran community in Milwaukee, and there's a lot of Lutheran power there in terms of numbers, but to serve the rest of them in educating them, or as the Black Power people say, in civilizing them.